B-Pod Studios.
Gasper Murray, 98.5 is Sports Hub. All right, you two hoop heads. As we wrap up the Sports Hub Celtic show, I did want to do this because I thought it was a fun little exercise we did on Felger and Maz earlier in the week before we took off for a few days for Thanksgiving, and a belated happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. If you want to join us, 617-779-0985. So after Buddy Hield went off in the Kings loss to the Celtics, was that Monday night? And looking at, you know, how Ben Simmons still is trying to find his shot and Jaylen Brown at times. Jaylen Brown good, but inconsistent. Like, we redrafted, at least just give me the top five. If we were to redraft the 2016 NBA draft, would you still have Ben Simmons at one?
Yes.
You would?
I would.
Over Pascal Siakam, who everyone missed on and was drafted in the 20s.
Yeah, I mean, I just think Simmons has more upside. I mean, you know, it's easy to sort of look at it now and say, oh, you know, he should have done this. But I mean, Simmons, his talent to be 6'10 and be able to do the things that he can do. And he hit a three this year.
Okay. How about you?
Yeah, I still take him number one. I think that, you know, certain players, the hype is such that you just can't get past it. I mean, there were years like Blake Griffin, remember? He was drafted number one. You had a pre-existing injury condition with him. But just the hype was such that, you know, jump shot be damned, he was going to be the player that you take. I think that Ben Simmons winds up being the guy, and I don't think you look back.
All right, so give me two through five then, Sean.
I would say Siakam, number two. I'm going to go Sabonis three. I got a thing for big men. So Sabonis, who was drafted, I think, 11th.
Yep.
So I would move him up to three, and I just think that his skill set is differentiates himself. If you want to say maybe Jamal Murray, 4, Malcolm Brogdon, 5, and I would say Hield might be 6.
So you don't have Jaylen Brown in your top in your top 5 to 6 there.
I think that Jaylen Brown, again, I'm looking at skill set. I think that Buddy Hield is a replicable NBA player. You can find a lot of guys. Yes, he hit for 40 against the Celtics. I know that's important. But he's a three-point shooter. He's a scorer.
Yeah.
I think Brogdon can do a few more things than Hield can. I think that Jamal Murray might be an ascendant superstar. I think as far as Jaylen Brown goes, he's got a better potential skill set than, say, a Hield. That just, you know, when he flashes and has a game where he does it all on both ends of the court, you say top five pick. He just hasn't shown it consistently enough yet, and that's where these other guys are right now. These guys are fringe all-stars. Jaylen Brown is a fringe all-star on some nights, but not all nights. Look at yesterday's game. I don't know why he wound up taking 8 shots,
yeah.
But he just did. He disappeared.
But Sabonis and Brogdon in your top five.
Sabonis is a good player.
Yeah, they are. The only thing is, and so I definitely skew towards the guys that are younger. So the
okay. You
know, both of those guys are, you know, on the back end of their 20s. Not that that's old. Cut off my hand to be at that age again. But I don't know. I hold against them. And Sabonis has been awesome too for Indiana. But I just those two don't make. They're in my 10, but they're not in the top five. So I like your top five. Very interesting there, Sean. Who rounds out yours, Chris?
Yeah, so obviously Siakam would have to be number two for me. I think number three for me it would be Jamal Murray because he can shoot the basketball, but he also has the ability to do some other things with that size, and he can distribute it a little bit.
In tandem with Jokic, he's so awesome.
Yeah, I like him. I like him a lot. I would have to say, you know, it's a good point. I sort of forgot when Sean was going through. I mean, Malcolm Brogdon's a really good player, and he can do a bunch of things. He was the rookie of the year from this class, so – you know, I would put him in there. And then this is tough because I'm leaving out Brandon Ingram, who's having a monster year this year and is young and has so much potential.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go with Buddy Hield because I think the league is skewed more and more, even though he's sort of one-dimensional. But shooting is one of the harder things to find in the league, I think. And he is a guy that can really shoot. Now, the one thing is I haven't seen him enough to know the last 2 years is – I know he can shoot, but is he racking up some of these numbers because he's on, you know, a team that's a non-playoff team? Or is this really what he is? But I just think that ability to shoot the basketball is such a separator in today's NBA. And then, you know, look, I love Jaylen Brown. You know I love Jaylen Brown, but he wouldn't even be 6 for me. Because
wow.
I'm looking at the way that Brandon Ingram is playing and his size with no Zion Williamson out, obviously, in New Orleans. But I'm looking at the way that Brandon Ingram is playing. And this is what people thought he was going to be.
Is he averaging like 27 points a game?
Yeah, he's averaging 26 a game. It's 25-9. And he's 49% from the field and 41% from three. And he's been really good. I mean, he's just been it hasn't translated to wins, but you're looking at about 26 a game, 7.5 rebounds, 4 assists. And he's like the lead dog on that team. And granted, it's not a very good team, but he's starting to blossom, I think. And that's a guy that I look at his potential and his ability, and you just, you look at that and you start to sort of drool.
Yeah, I have him in my top five. He's 4. So I have Siakam number 1, and it's just because he's, he's transitioned to one of, a complete star player. He was a 2 last year. He's completely taken over that Raptors team. Everyone missed on him. I think if he had a chance again, I would think he would go 1. Then Jamal Murray, then Ben Simmons, because I do still see the upside, and he's only, 22 years old. Brandon Ingram, and I have Jaylen Brown in my top 5. Maybe it's a little bit of bias, and you watch him night in, night out. And I'm with you, Sean. He is inconsistent, but he at least plays defense. It's one of the things I hold against Buddy Hield. Yeah, pure shooter.
Right.
But on the other end of the floor, he's completely useless. That's like that kind of thing still matters to me. And then I'm an ageist. I skew with the younger guys because I do consider upside. I'm not a Ben Simmons guy all that much, but considering the age and, his ability as a playmaker, I think he's an underrated rebounder. Like, I don't know. I look at the upside, and you got to think of the future with that kid, too. So that's why Brogdon and Sabonis are towards the end of that.
The one thing I'd say on Hield, and I hear what you're saying, he's not a great defensive player, but I think to be basically the prime, the difference with Jaylen and some of these other guys is like, Jaylen's like the third option on the team, right? Or fourth, depending on how you look at it when Hayward comes back. Buddy Hield is like the option on a team and averaging 20 points a game now in 2 consecutive seasons. And so that's sort of my, you can look at it both ways. There are guys like Zach LaVine who stacks up a lot of points by being on a bad team because there's not a better option. Maybe Jaylen Brown would be doing that. But at the same time, there's that pressure if you're the guy every night. Like, you can't have a night like he had against the Nets yesterday where you only take 8 shots. And that's a different kind of pressure that some of these other guys are dealing with that he doesn't have to worry about.
So you mentioned Ingram, both being in your top 5, and that might have been an oversight on my part. He gets out from under LeBron's thumb and gets to thrive in New Orleans. If Jaylen Brown is in Ingram's position, is he doing the same sort of stuff?
Probably not.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know if it's as consistent, as consistent of what Brandon Ingram is doing on a night-to-night basis. Consistency, I think, is still the most elusive. And that's always like the last thing to come. These guys are so talented. They can light it up for a random game. They can light it up 2 out of every 5 games, but can you get to the point where you can do it 4 out of 5 or all 5? That's always the last thing that sort of comes for guys in the league when they establish themselves, is that night to night consistency with production.
All right. See, I just wanted to have a little fun exercise there. I enjoyed that earlier in the week. So we redraft the 2016 NBA draft. It's Patriots and Houston Texans tomorrow night. It does feel like there's an air of cockiness, which at this point, I can completely understand in terms of the Patriots fan base. With all the illness that they've been stricken with in that locker room, there's 17 guys that are listed. Is it questionable officially? But 9 have illness.
Yeah.
It feels like Marcus Cannon was patient zero who started this whole thing because he was sick going into last week.
You ever seen that movie Contagion?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
It was one of these schlocky.
Than The Irishman?
Than The Irishman.
I'm just saying, it's like if you watch that movie, man, it will freak you out. And it's like,
I'm a germaphobe. I don't know if that's really up my alley.
It is. I'm telling you, like, it's basically about a worldwide pandemic that starts with, I'm trying to remember I think it's Gwyneth Paltrow's in it. I think she's like this mom and goes on like a business trip and comes back.
She's patient zero.
Mm.
Well, there's sickness. There's a new kicker for the Patriots. The offense has been struggling. I don't know. Do you just think overall the people aren't taking the Texans seriously because of the history? Bill O'Brien, 0-5 against this team. It feels like for all their talent that they've been inconsistent, the Texans. They should probably I go back to that last game that they played on the Thursday night against Indianapolis. Like, they struggled to even put up 20 in that win. Are people taking this game too lightly tomorrow night?
I think they are. Yeah, just because the Patriots having these health issues, they're in the middle of a very taxing stretch. I think these games against the Eagles and the Cowboys have really been grinds. They've been tractor pull type of games. You're not going to have the weather in your favor this week from a defensive standpoint. Extra time off for the Texans. And look, who does this game mean more to, the Texans or the Patriots? I mean, this is a game that I think can really put the Texans on the map. For the Patriots, it's just another game in a tough stretch against a team that they've traditionally owned. And my other concern is offensively. Now, we'll see. Hopefully Sanu and Dorsett are back. But we are looking at an offense that's now gone 5 straight games below 350 yards of offense. And that you know, is going back to the Cleveland game, hasn't generated more than 20 points on its own, you know, in a while. It's four straight games where 20 points is the max generated by just the offense. So if you get into a little bit of a shootout situation or whatever, I just think when you look at this game, it's a little bit of a trap game too, because you have Kansas City on the other side, which everybody knows is the game of the year.
Has your perspective changed on any of these teams in the AFC? Or do you think more of Baltimore since they completely waxed the Rams last Monday night in LA?
Yeah, I do. I do. First of all, I'm impressed with the way that Baltimore just destroyed Houston the week before. What was that, 41-7?
Yeah.
I mean, just annihilated them. That was impressive. And when you look at what's happening defensively with Baltimore, it seems like Marcus Peters has really solidified that secondary, and they're starting to get a little more pass rush. You know, I don't think the linebackers are great, but they're starting to sort of get their act together on defense, which is really scary. And then I feel like offensively, they're putting so much pressure on the opposing offenses to keep up that that's helping the defense as well. At the end of the day, I think there are only two teams in the AFC that could beat the Patriots in the playoffs, and that's Baltimore and Kansas City.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. And Kansas City's defense has just been mostly wretched, but Baltimore.
But if the Patriots are going to play offense the way they're playing offense, yeah. I'm not sure that Kansas City's defense is the detriment that we think it is relative to playing the Patriots.
Yeah, that's why I'm real interested in that game. And Baltimore's a real problem. Like, that job they did on the Rams. I just thought with the travel last week, too, I was like, okay, they're going to come back down to earth. Oh, they didn't. But, boy, one thing came out of that game I feel good about, and that's being right on Jared Goff. Oh, boy. Oh, that's...
Bizarro Ryan Gosling?
That team's broken, Chris. Like, that's another one. You can lump them in with the Atlanta Falcons. Like, they've been ruined from that Super Bowl experience against the Patriots. And I have a stat for you on Jared Goff, too, that backs up how right I am on that puppet. They are done. And Sean McVay, too, that's the other thing. Just quickly on him, he showed me in that game, like, he's a great coordinator. What he got out of Goff these last couple of years, it's exemplary. But as a head coach, you force the Ravens to punt once in that game, and you have 12 men on the field. Like, he's lost control there too. Like, that message is over. Like, it's him as a head coach. It's overrated. Go back to being a coordinator and a quarterback whisperer, because you as a head coach, it's done there with the Rams. They've killed them. But a fun stat for you on Jared Goff, and we'll continue to dive deep into the Patriots and Houston Texans coming up tomorrow night. It's a Week 12 action here. You can catch it on 98.5 Sports Hub with kickoff at 8:20, the pregame with Gasper and Beadle, and then Beadle and myself in the postgame as well. We'll look at that game. Take your calls on it as well. 617-779-0985. Gasper Murray here on 98.5 Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Okay, well, we've been grinding away here on the Texans. You know, again, it's another really impressive team. Done a good job in all areas down there. Productive offense, defense, special teams. Obviously well coached, a lot of good players on special teams, you know, lead the league in punt coverage, kickoff coverage, you know, do a great job with field position. Defensively, you know, Romeo's one of the best. They always sound great technique team, good tackling team. Don't beat themselves, make you earn all of it. And then offensively, they've got a lot of explosive players, you know, do a lot of things well. So they're really at the top of the league in just about everything offensively. Wherever you want to look, certainly big plays. You know, first down production, you know, that's good at a lot. You know, another big challenge for us this week to get ready to go down here and face a team that, you know, we haven't faced in a while. Certainly a lot of changes since the last time we played them, so a little different than, you know, when we opened with them last year. We had, you know, seen them more recently. There's a little more space between these games and I'd say quite a few personnel changes from the last time, but you know, that's what it is.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick giving you a pretty thorough preview of tomorrow night's opponent, the Houston Texans, down in Houston. Again, the Sunday night game will kick off here right around 8:20 on 98.5 Sports Hub. It's Gasper Murray. A couple of updates heading into the game in terms of the Patriots personnel. Jason McCourty and Byron Cowart have officially been ruled out. McCourty's been dealing with, what, a groin, Chris, these last couple of weeks? Because he was out against
Dallas. Yeah, groin injury, yes.
And some positive news, this from Mike Reese of ESPN Boston. Mohamed Sanu with the high ankle that kept him out against Dallas last week, and Philip Dorsett, who was in the concussion protocol last week, both making the trip. So there was a chance for both of them being fully active tomorrow night. I would think that they would need him. Not that Houston defense is any, I don't know. I don't think that they're as good as how the Eagles were a couple of weeks ago, and I think Dallas is good. I think they're pretty much on par with Dallas, you know, and last week we don't really know how much better the offense really was because of the weather. Although I will say, despite the weather, what was he, the numbers rather for Brady, was he like 17 to 37 or whatever it was? I actually thought he had a sneaky good game against
Dallas. I did too, you know, given the circumstances and what he has to do to win the game. I mean, I thought some of those throwaways were good and not putting himself in a position to make negative plays. I think sometimes that's what you have to do. He was 17 of 37, and he was sacked twice, but he didn't throw any interceptions, didn't turn the football over, so I think that was pretty good. It is a telling sign, though, when you look at this season that he, I mean, he leads the NFL in throwaways. You know, that that is a stat, and he leads the league in them right now. And you look at the last four games, and the completion percentage is 56%. And that's not really, for me, as much on him as it is he's throwing the football away a lot and living to play another play, pretty much.
Yeah, so I'm looking at that because I'm trying to think, too, when was the last time the Patriots were there? Because I feel like this game's always here. It was the opener last year. It was early in September in 2017. And that game was a complete shootout. Actually, both those games
were pretty competitive. Was it 2015?
Yeah, you're right. So it was December of 2015, 27-6 was the final Patriots over the Texans.
It was kind of a dud of a game.
That was a Brian Hoyer game. Of course it was.
Did LeGarrette Blount get hurt in that game?
I don't recall. No, that was, what was the game I'm thinking of? Oh, maybe he did. Maybe that was the game that he got hurt in. I barely remember that game. It was just like, that was kind of a, towards the, down the stretch, kind of a slog of a season. And then you had those two games toward the end of the year where they drop it in Miami, where they try to run it 27
Steven
straight
Jackson.
Times. Steven Jackson.
That's why I'm saying, like, did Blount get hurt? Because it's like, oh, now we have to bring in Steven Jackson.
Yeah, it might have been. I don't know. There's just a few that always stand out to me. Like, going back, it was the first time they ever played there in 2003 when, you know, they're completely dominant. You know, that Texans team was bad. They have to go to overtime. Vinatieri kicks the game winner there. And the horrific game in
2009.
The 09 season.
Which was technically the 2010 calendar year. It was the last game of the year. Right. I was there with Burt Breer. I covered that one, yeah.
And Welker blew out his knee.
Yeah,
and it's
Bernard,
like, oh,
Pollard ready to tackle.
They are completely screwed. And then they were the following week in the wild card game against the Ravens.
You know, I rarely toot my own horn, at least in my own mind. But I actually wrote a column that week saying that they had nothing to gain from this game and they should rest Welker.
Oh, yeah. The clairvoyant Gasper. Yeah. Clairvoyant Chris, they called him. Yeah, I remember that one like yesterday. Awful. I said I had a fun stat for you for Jared Goff.
Oh, that's right. You did. Your boy.
Yeah, well, I get a lot wrong. We, you know, it happens here. Sports radio, you have to fill up time. You're going to say a lot of dumb things. Lord knows I do. But there's one thing I have been 100% right on. And that's Jared Goff. And I said it going into the Super Bowl last year. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's all Sean McVay. Credit to him. He got the most out of that bum. And in the first, here's the stat. The first 35 regular season and postseason starts of Jared Goff's career, 29-6. Rams scored 23 or more points in 83% of their games. The Rams averaged 3 offensive touchdowns per game. It's pretty good. And especially credit to, and that's, of course, with Jeff Fisher there that rookie season. Was that in 15? Right, yeah, because he came here and was awful. But McVay takes over, gets the most out of this stiff. Again, Rams averaging 3 offensive touchdowns per game. Beginning with the Super Bowl last year, Goff is now 6-6, and the Rams have scored more than 23 points in only 50% of their games. They've averaged 2 offensive touchdowns per game. In other words, Belichick exposed him to the entire league. He's broken. He's what I said he was. He's a puppet for McVay, and credit to him, and the most he got out of it, he stinks. And if you watch Monday night's game, like, he makes so many ill-advised throws and bad decisions, and if he doesn't have Daddy McVay in his ear, as soon as that communication shuts off in his helmet, and if you mix up, show him an exotic blitz or something like that, and he can't read the coverage, he's absolutely screwed. Stinks. And he's on the hook. They're on the hook for him for $110 million guaranteed over the next 3 years. Oh, it's so good. Because that's what that... I can't stand the owner there of the Rams. That's
Stan Kroenke.
Stan Kroenke and taking that team out of St. Louis. That should have never happened. There's really no appetite for them or the Chargers in L.A. It's blowing up in their faces. That's the one thing. The schadenfreude in that, Chris, I enjoy so much. The pain and the misery of those, the owners there, between Spanos and Kroenke. No, there was no appetite for teams in L.A. And, yeah, they're going to build that
stadium.
Yeah, but
the league had to go back there. There shouldn't be two teams. There shouldn't be two. They did have to. So you think the league should not be in the second largest market?
They didn't need it. There's... they're fickle. You know how it is in L.A., and I know you love it, and it's a great city anyway. But in terms of sports, when they're winning, they're grinning, and they'll show up. But if it's just going to be a mediocre product like the Rams are this year, and the Chargers, there's no appetite for.
I agree with that. You're totally right on the Chargers. The Chargers sort of panicked. They never should have left San Diego. I think the league would be better off if the team was in San Diego. There are two teams in Southern California, but they're spaced out. You know, I mean, I traveled. You and I both traveled to St. Louis for the Stanley Cup Final. Do you really blame Stan Kroenke?
I mean, it's a middle
market. Or any of those employees.
It's a middle market city, but I think that people actually cared about that team there. I think that they did. I don't know if that stadium was the best.
Jim, they've lost two NFL teams. Do you know how hard that is? Yeah. To lose two NFL, to be a market that loses two NFL teams?
Atlanta did lose two NHL teams, too, there. It's kind of, yeah, I see where you're making a, decent point.
Come on.
All right.
So the Rams are better off in LA, and so is anybody working for the Rams.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
But,
I just don't like that.
Well said on Goff. You know what the biggest thing is, you know, I've seen with that team? You know what's changed everything for them? That Todd Gurley's just a guy.
Oh, and that's another bad contract that they gave. And as much as I'm a running backist and I want, you know, I thought it was the right move at the time to draft him in the first round, the extension that they gave him was ridiculous, especially knowing his injury history with that knee. He's another one. He's not been the same.
No, it's unfortunate because he's a great player, but physically I'm not sure he'll ever be the same guy. And then they went all in on Jalen Ramsey, so they're in a position now. You realize that they don't have a first-round pick this year or next year, and I think they're going to go four straight years without a first-round pick.
Yeah. No, they're screwed. They're in a tough spot. They're another one-hit wonder like the Atlanta Falcons. They've been broken.
I believe in McVay more than you do, though. I think, look, we're spoiled here by the sustainability of the Patriots. This is what happens in the NFL. Teams are good, and then they fade. And it's not like they're horrible. They also happen to play in probably the toughest division in the NFL. I mean, you know, if you plunk them down in the AFC East, I'm pretty sure they'd be the Buffalo Bills. They'd have the Bills record.
Yeah. Yeah. The NFC – so it feels like with that loss, by the way, too, on Monday night, like that – outside of the NFC East and whatever one of those crummy teams wins that division, your Cowboys, who you're all in on.
All in.
Still foolishly. Or the
America's
Eagles,
team.
Who could, you know, cockroach their way into the playoffs again like they did last year. That field is set, Chris. Like, the Rams losing, there's not going to be a team that sneaks into the six. It's just, you know, it's the permutations of, you know, who's going to land where. But the teams, they're set.
Unless the Vikings. I mean,
I don't think that's going to happen. They're pretty good.
Always a possibility. Because what happens, they start, I agree. Don't get me wrong. And Cousins is having a great year. But what happens is that offense starts struggling. The receivers start chirping. Zimmer starts chirping about how they should run the ball more to the offensive coordinator. And the whole thing unravels. You know, Zimmer has very little patience for the offense not being exactly what he wants, which is pretty much an offense out of, like, 1965. So they're a team, to me, that doesn't handle adversity well. And if they lose some of the bigger games they have coming up on their schedule, like they have it's Seattle, right? That's the Monday night
game. Yes, yeah.
If they lose that game and then there's another big game they have coming up, if they lose those games, I could see that turning and I could see them having their entire season submarine. I generally agree with you, but there's just something about the Vikings I don't trust.
I can understand that given their history. The team that I don't trust at all for the way that they've played down to competition in recent weeks, it's the Saints. Like, that team I can completely see getting knocked off in the divisional weekend. I really can. Like,
really?
Yeah. There's something I don't trust that team. They play down to the Panthers last week. They kind of struggle and, like, let the Falcons hang around. In this game on Thursday night, they lost to the Falcons at home a couple of weeks ago, which Drew Brees is like sacked like 8 or 9 times. That's one of the worst teams
loss.
In the league. Like, there's something I don't trust with the Saints. I just feel like, and I hate to say it because of their defense more than anything else. I feel like coming out of the NFC, it's either going to be the Niners or who am I forgetting here?
The Seahawks.
Yeah, or the Seahawks. Yeah. I just and Green Bay, I don't trust either. You know, they got completely waxed in San Francisco last week. Like, I don't know. I don't trust many of those teams coming out of that conference either. All right. Sports Up headlines here with Sean Silver. And then back after this, you want to join the show. And the time remaining here is we're talking Pats as they go into Houston tomorrow night against the Texans. 617-779-0985.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Got guys with a lot of weak immune systems. So it was rough today, though. We had a lot of guys coming here and got sent home. And, you know, hopefully hydrate and, you know, by the end of the week. But, you know, those are tough situations. You know, you don't kind of know how you're going to feel, you know. But like we talked about last week, like Cannon was a guy who was sick all week and, you know, fought through the game. So we got a lot of tough guys, but we got to kind of see how it goes throughout the week.
Devin McCourty on the illness that's run rampant through the Patriots locker room leading into tomorrow night's game. Patriots, Texans. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. His brother, Jason, downgraded out, dealing with a groin injury. But if you missed it earlier, Mike Reese of ESPN Boston saying that Mohamed Sanu, Philip Dorsett, making a trip after they missed last week against Dallas, so they could be good to go tomorrow night. So that's some good news for the offense that, of course, has struggled. But considering Brady's history against this team, you think that if there's going to be a game that he breaks out, it'd be this one, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of a litmus test game, again, for the offense. I feel like we've been saying that now for like 3 weeks.
Well, sure.
Four games, at least, going back to the Baltimore game. We thought they should be able to light it up against them. But Brady, since Bill O'Brien, you know, has been there, and I'll give you some numbers. These are just sort of regular season numbers. He has absolutely lit it up against Houston. And if you look at the numbers there, this should be a pretty good game for Brady. So 12 touchdown passes, 3 interceptions, quarterback rating 109.1, completion percentage 64.1, which is pretty good. So this is regular season and postseason now. So he's done a really good job against these Bill O'Brien, Romeo Crennel, and Mike Vrabel was in there as the defensive coordinator for the game where he actually struggled. That was the game when they threw the ball off. You know, Michael Floyd didn't catch it and it got picked.
Yeah.
They were bringing all those pressures up the middle. That was causing issues, but that was Mike Vrabel in there. But he's done a pretty good job traditionally against the Houston Texans. So if they don't do well against Houston in this game with Sanu back in the lineup and Dorsett back in the lineup, then I think that that is a referendum on the state of this offense at this point and what this offense is capable of, or really incapable of at this point in the season.
Yeah. The other thing in terms of the offense I want to see tomorrow night is if James White breaks out, because it feels like he's been completely rubbed out, Chris. And I don't necessarily think that's an injury thing. I was talking to the post game last week with Greg Bedard of Boston Sports Journal and said that now that this team doesn't have a tight end you got to worry about, i.e. Gronk, well, the teams he had spoke to an unnamed coordinator, I think is what he referenced it as, that said, like, yeah, well, teams around the league, like, we don't have to worry about this anymore. And having James White, you know, be that safety valve and having him being open and having a, you know, dedicated linebacker, we don't have to do that kind of thing anymore, because now we can put someone from the secondary or a safety that can keep up with him in terms of speed, and he's not getting that kind of separation. But it's odd to see, because he usually just is like, I look at him as like an easy 6 yards, and it ain't happening.
I mean, this could be a game where that happens for him. I'll be intrigued. Last year when they played him, the Texans had Tyrann Mathieu, and they put Tyrann Mathieu on him to try and
play games.
Oh. And so, you know, obviously they don't have Tyrann Mathieu now. I still think linebacker coverage is a weakness there. You know, your guy, our guy, Zach Cunningham, Benardrick McKinney, those guys have stiff hips. They're not the greatest in coverage. But if you can now, say, put Tayshawn Gibson, or I think Justin Reed's supposed to be back for Houston, if you can put one of those guys on White, that's a much better matchup. I think if I'm the Patriots, though, I make the Texans prove it, because traditionally they have not been able to cover backs out of the backfield. And I think I make them prove that they can do that.
Let's go to Randy in Malden. You're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello, Randy.
Hi, guys. What's up?
Hey.
I just want to comment on the Patriots season as far as the scheduling is concerned. Mm-hmm. This year, it seems like the Patriots are, I don't want to say struggling to put up points, but it seems in recent years they haven't had a problem with that. Going forward with the rest of the schedule, I wouldn't sleep on any out of the remaining teams that they have to play, because, you know, one loss here or there and they could be knocked out of the, you know, down to the wild card spot, or because, you know, Buffalo's playing well, and I forget who else is in the hunt with the in the division there. I guess it's just Buffalo. But
yeah, it's just Buffalo. Buffalo's 2 games back.
It's been a dogfight like the whole season. So, I mean, I wouldn't sleep on any of these teams coming in going forward.
Yeah, and the only thing is, though, Randy, like, it's even if the Bills were to knock off the Patriots in that Week 16 game, the next tier would be common opponents, right? So if they ended up with the same record, the Patriots still win, because the other losses that the Bills have had this year were the Eagles and the Browns. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So it's a virtual impossibility, even if the Bills were to end up with the same record and beat the Pats in Week 16. I will say, though, that game was a hell of a lot more interesting than I thought it would have been a month ago. The Bills feel like they might be a problem, at least for one playoff game.
Well, I mean, look, given the issues the Patriots have had offensively and the ineffectiveness, and the fact that since McDermott's been there, they've given Brady problems to begin with, even in years when he had a more prolific offense, it could be another tractor pull, sort of like the Philly game or the Dallas game where it's low scoring. But again, I can't subscribe to Josh Allen coming into Gillette and beating the Patriots. There's no way.
Yeah, so for those that missed the first segment of the show today, I thought of Chris on Thanksgiving after the meal, looking at some of these games. I was like, oh, specifically the Dallas and Buffalo game. I was like, oh, I wonder if Chris wants a mea culpa on Dallas, who you have pot committed on as the NFC representative in the Super Bowl, and Josh Allen, who you hate.
Yeah.
But you're not going back on either.
Nope. Resolute.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
I'm resolute on Allen. The Cowboys, you should come off that one, my friend.
There's a fine line between patience and obstinance, and maybe I'm leaning more towards obstinance at this point, but I'm not bailing. I'm not bailing on the Cowboys. I just think they're going to make the playoffs. All they have to do is get in. And that team, it's like classic New York Giants type of thing. Like, team that half-asses it most of the year, underperforms, frustrates, you know, the crap out of you, and then all of a sudden, like, turns it on in the playoffs.
You mean like last year's Patriots?
Yeah, kind of. And so I would not be surprised if that happened with Dallas. They have so much talent, and if they can ever put it all together, plus, I thought they were pretty good. You know, I'm also basing it on, I was really impressed with the way they played the Rams last year in that playoff game. You know, I thought they really hung in there and gave it to him, and I think Prescott's better this year, so we'll see. I don't know. I'm take committed on that one.
There are any other games? There's some of these games tomorrow. Like, I saw your colleague at the Globe, Ben Volen, all upset that the fact that this is going to be a washout between the Niners and Baltimore tomorrow. Like, it's going to be 100% chance of precipitation.
He's
railing against weather games. Like, I don't know. This is what's going to happen at this time of year. I mean, what do you expect unless you're playing indoors and it's obviously temperature
control? Yeah, but you want to see. I mean, you want to see that. You know, it's like I tend to lean more with Ben. It's like if you went to a Super Bowl and it got washed out, wouldn't you be disappointed?
I don't know. It kind of worked out well for the Colts and the Bears in 06 in Miami when it rained that whole game. And then you had Prince playing Purple Rain in the rain.
Yeah, I was there for that, and it was cool. But I didn't think it got to the point where it really – I mean, Rex Burkhead just stinks. Like, that wasn't why he was missing throws. And Peyton Manning chokes in big games. That's why he was missing – like, I didn't think the weather was that big of a factor in the inability of the offenses to operate.
Rex Grossman, you mean? You said Rex Burkhead.
Oh, sorry, Rex Grossman, yes.
Both Rexes.
Sorry. That Freudian slip there, yeah.
But I'm still, despite the weather, I'm interested in seeing that game. And if you're the NFL, you've got to be so mad that you ended up flexing that Kansas City-Oakland game to 425, because that was what happened. Because people were like, why is this a 1 o'clock game tomorrow? And I'm one of them, but it's because a couple of weeks ago, Oakland was still, and I get it, they're still flirting with that six seed, but they've come back down to earth. They got waxed by the Jets last week. That's embarrassing, so they're going to be out of it. And they take that game to the 425? You idiots. It should have been the Niners at Baltimore in the prime time game tomorrow.
I totally agree with you.
And then you got a good one on Monday night, Minnesota at Seattle. And
interested in that one, I really am. I think that would be a good game.
Yeah, because you don't believe in the Vikings. You still think there's
a chance. It's not that I don't believe in them. I don't believe in their – I wouldn't be surprised if they unraveled, because I just don't think they're really set up to overcome adversity. Like, again, earlier in the year, you have the wide receivers very publicly, Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, very publicly basically denigrating the quarterback in Kirk Cousins, and he's played better since then. And I think you have an impatient head coach who really has no patience at all for when the offense – like, the moment the offense doesn't perform, he's like, well, let's just run the ball 45 times a game. You know,
yeah, and the other thing you have tomorrow, it might be interesting. I don't think anything's going to happen. It's the second game between the Cleveland Browns and the Steelers. This the first game that they'll be facing each other, obviously, since the whole swing of the helmet with Miles Garrett, and just further proof of the stupidity of the coaches in this league. It's Belichick and everybody else. That moron Freddie Kitchens apparently was last night. A picture was posted to social media on Instagram of Freddie Kitchens. With a fan wearing a Pittsburgh Started It t-shirt that obviously references the brawl between his team and the Steelers that led to Miles Garrett being suspended indefinitely. Like, what are you doing?
Well, I can see why Baker Mayfield wanted him as the coach, you know, because he has basically the same lack of judgment and discretion that Mayfield has. So it's like, great, two good old boys just mouthing off, or, you know, just unable to control their impulses and always, you know,
it's a reason
trash talking the other team.
It's further proof as to why they're one of the most penalized teams in the league. It's just undisciplined and stupid.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right. One more segment to go. It's five questions for Chris Casper. Got nothing to do with sports. Next.
This is Casper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Nothing to do with sports. I got
right, five questions for Chris Gasper. Had nothing to do with sports. We'll try to run through these as quickly as possible. It's how we try to wrap up the show each and every week here on Gasper Murray on 98.5 The Sports. Chris, question number one, with Thanksgiving now behind us, it's okay officially to put up your Christmas tree. If you do put one up in the Gasper household, is it fake or real?
So it's artificial. I've only had an artificial tree my whole life because my mom and I are both allergic to pine.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
No, even like the air freshener smell or anything
like
that?
I don't like that. It's like I get a headache and I just, it's a little difficulty breathing. So I don't do, like, for me, an artificial tree, because it's all I've ever known, is a real Christmas tree.
Is it already up?
It's not. It's not. In fact, I think that's something we have to do today. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of putting, we live in a relatively confined space in the city, so I'm not like a huge fan of it, but my wife really collects ornaments and she has some really nice ones. So I think that's something we're probably going to end up doing that today, unless I can dodge it with college football.
I'm ultimately with you on a fake tree. Growing up in the Murray Dome, there was a few years there we got real trees, and they're nice, but boy, what a pain in the ass. And it's just, you get the needles everywhere, and it's just...
I know, when you're jamming that USS flag under that real tree, it's like pine needles everywhere, right?
It's a very spoiled boy.
Yeah.
Question number two, do you talk to your lovely wife before you make a big purchase, say more than $500?
Yes.
Hi, liar. Question number three. If some of your friends invited you, say Jasmine and I invited you, say, hey, Gaspers, come on over for game night. We're going to play Pictionary, like game night. You know, you got those friends that invite you over for game night. Do you go or do you bail?
No, we would go, only because we don't do it often, but I actually did this with my sister recently in California. And actually, it was pretty fun. And now they have the games you can do it, like, on your phone. Like, what's that game?
Oh, the one that you hold up. Oh,
yeah, it's actually not bad, and I feel like you'd be good at it because you have a lot of random, like...
A lot of random information
in my brain. You're a funny guy, you're competitive, and you have a lot of random pop culture knowledge. I think I would totally do game night with you and Jeff.
Yeah, you're better off just getting drunk and, like, playing, just grab-assing and talking. I don't know. And I do get competitive, and that's not a good thing. I remember going back, like, 10, 15 years ago, there was a ping pong game. Actually fun on, like, Pictionary and that nonsense. Yeah. And I yelled at my girlfriend at the time. I'm like, you're costing us the game! Like, I take it too seriously. So it's better I bail on game night. Question four, are you going to Beatles' annual holiday party on Friday night? And if so, will you sing karaoke?
I will be there. I will not sing. I have a terrible singing voice. So I won't be singing. Will you be singing?
Of course. Year in, year out. I just don't know what I'm going to sing yet. What if I bring it up for a duet?
Absolutely not.
Boo. Final question. Now that I've railed on The Irishman, the new terribly overrated 3.5-hour slog of a movie on Netflix that the world wants to try to convince you is actually a good movie. It's not. It's one of Scorsese's worst. Will you be likely to see it, less likely to see it, or will you see it to spite me?
Less likely to see it. I don't know. It's hard. You know, I don't know. You always come in with it. You have a habit of getting me into shows that you then bail on. So it's like...
Like Stranger Things?
Yeah, like Stranger Things. Yeah. So it's like one of those things where I probably won't see this. I do kind of want to see Knives Out, though, even though I hate Rian Johnson because he ruined Star Wars.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so that's one of the things I hold against that. And this is the thing. I hear a lot of good things. I hear it's good. You know, I kept hearing The Irishman's very good, and it's not. It's a terrible movie, and it's slow, and it's boring, and the whole time you sit there and say, so they're trying to make 80-year-old men look like they're 30 with CGI? It doesn't work, and it's bad dye jobs, and it's just a plodding mess of a movie. And the fight at 30 minutes in, there's a fight that happens, and you see... what is supposed to be a 30-year-old Robert De Niro try to beat up a man, and he looks like a decrepit 80-year-old man. Like, you can't. You're like, what am I watching? This is embarrassing. And then another scene, too. Robert De Niro's character, Frank Sheeran, says to a CIA man who apparently has big ears, he has normal-sized ears, and the guy's like, are you looking at my big ears? In the scene, Robert De Niro, because he's an 80-year-old man, has ears the size of dinner plates. It's so bad. It's an embarrassing movie. And it just proves my point. Martin Scorsese hasn't made a great movie since Casino in 1995. What about The Departed, Murray? The Departed's fine.
I thought The Departed's pretty good, actually. I would say that was a great movie. I really enjoy that movie.
Fine. Go back and watch that now, and you see Nicholson as the protagonist there, and it's like, oh, he's so corny. Oh, with a bad Boston accent, and then the rat in the final scene. Ugh. It's so ham-handed and cheesy. The Departed. Get the hell out of here. It's fine. It didn't deserve Best Picture. For Chris Gasper, always a pleasure, my friend.
Good to see you.
You should see it just for spite.
This is like Men on Film.
You should, yeah. Hated it. Also, Tracy Clements for producing the show, Brandon Glasheen and Sean Silver on the headlines, and for you if you happen to listen today. Hey, it's a Matt McCarthy experience coming up next. We're already 2 minutes over into your time. I hope you don't mind, Fred.
I don't mind one bit. They don't pay me by the word, Jim. They pay me by the hour, so this is totally fine. That was a nice and cordial five questions with Chris Gasper. 2 weeks ago when I hosted for you, things got a little heated between me and Chris. It spilled over to Twitter. Things were very ugly over Chris's horrendous travel takes. Well, absolutely horrendous.
Because I like recline my seat the slightest bit, which he takes as an affront as a taller person.
A personal affront. Chris also finds that I should not, even though I paid for the exact same overhead space.
This is personal.
If I'm only traveling with a backpack, I paid for the overhead space. I'm putting the backpack up there. I'm 6'5". My feet don't fit anywhere on the airplane. The backpack's going up there. I paid for the space, and
absolutely
Chris took
not.
This as
no.
a personal affront.
No. That,
so
that
things
speaks,
got ugly. Things
that speaks
got heated.
To who you are as a person, McCarthy. There's no way. That overhead space is for the bags that will only fit in the overhead first. And then if there's additional space, which there almost always is, then you can jam your backpack sideways in between two carry-ons. If you put your backpack in the overhead bin first, I literally have ripped backpacks out of the overhead bin.
Infringing on
that is one of my pet peeves. Because a carry-on suitcase is not going to fit under the seat. You can deal with a backpack under your seat for a 2.5-hour flight.
Travel lightly, Chris. Travel lightly.
You're only on for an hour and a half because I coming in here. I mean, there was signs. People
I
already
it was 2 hours.
Oh well, you're
is Notre Dame at 4 o'clock.
Well, at this
or
point,
are they at
this point, it's going to be an hour and a half the way this crossover's going.
Oh, I thought you were going into Alabama, Auburn or something. I thought there's a whole slate of college football here on the station today. The people are pumped. They've been holding signs out front, walking into the building this morning. Like, we can't wait for college football.
Oh, I'm just as fired up as you are, Jim.
Oh, great.
Nothing better than college football.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.